Hariya Shuddha Haridas Thakur is my Sri Guru Maha. So, Shivajit Goswami obviously is one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. He's the youngest of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. He's the son of Anupama. Anupama is the brother of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And Anupama passed away after he had association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anupama also was a great devotee of Lord Ramchandra. Rupa and Sanatana tried to talk Anupama out of worshipping Lord Ramchandra. They told him, actually, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. You should just be chanting Hare Krishna, no more of the Sita Ram, Raghupati, Raghava, Raghava Ram, Raja Ram, no more Hanuman, Hanuman. Just chant Hare Krishna. And so he tried, and he wasn't able to deviate his mind from the worship of Lord Ramchandra. And so, therefore, Lord Chaitanya praised him, and also praised Murari Gupta. There was a similar encounter that Lord Chaitanya had with Murari Gupta in the same way, for being faithful to their particular Ishta Devata, that means the worshipful deity. So Jiva Goswami actually renounced this world at a very young age. And the reason he renounced this world, of course, it was Lord Chaitanya's plan, but externally the reason he renounced this world is that his father passed away when he was very young, like when he was 4 years old or something like that, and his mother passed away when he was 20 or 19, something like that, very, very young. And so he just thought, this world is cruel. So you see sometimes in the lives of great pure devotees that Krishna puts them in a very distressful situations. You know, looking at our situation, you know, my own situation, sometimes what I consider to be distressful is nothing. I mean, like, objectively compared to what some of the great devotees went through. Like Srila Jiva Goswami. I mean, my mother and father didn't pass away when I was young. I had a relatively nice life. I got anything I wanted, you know, automobiles, anything I wanted. So, but still, you know, little things. It's like that story of the princess and the pea, because the princess, she was used to a very opulent life. She considered even a pea in the bottom of the 100 mattresses to be intolerable. Could you imagine that? Whew, terrible. But see, it's all relative like that. So Srila Jiva Goswami's father passed away, and his mother passed away, and he just thought, this world is a horrible place. Therefore, I'm going to join my uncles in Vrindavan. So Krishna gives an impetus like that to devotees. He makes things sometimes pretty miserable, or a little miserable, so that they have an impetus to be Krishna conscious or do what they're supposed to do. Like Srila Prabhupada had that experience with his wife. His wife made his life miserable. I'm not saying that every wife should make their husband miserable. That's their duty. But in that particular case, it was actually Krishna's arrangement. And because of that, Srila Prabhupada gave up his household life, came to the Western world. That's a specific arrangement. And, of course, we have the story of Queen Kunti, how Krishna arranged that Queen Kunti's life was completely full of stress and anxiety. I mean, I don't think any one of us could have tolerated the anxiety and stress that Queen Kunti had to endure, right? You know, she had, her sons are continually, I mean, mother loves her sons, and her sons were continually threatened by the Kurus. I mean, can you imagine one time there's an attempted drowning of one of your sons and poisoning of one of your sons, and then they try to burn all your sons alive along with you. I mean, continually there was so much intrigue in the palace intrigue, as it's called. So she prayed for more of those instances so that she could become detached from her family. It was interesting. Anyway, and her family was great Vaishnavas. So it's not that we should become detached from great Vaishnavas. However, if we're attached for the wrong reason, that's another point. Anyway, so Jiva Goswami, getting on with Jiva Goswami, arrived in Vrindavan when he was 20 years old. 20 years old. He had previously had association with Lord Nityananda. Even when his mother was present, he wanted to go see Lord Nityananda, so he made an excuse. He told his mother that, you know, I'm just going to go to see our ancestral, what's called an ancestral home. I'll describe what that is. An ancestral home is, you know, where your grandparents or your great-grandparents lived. I mean, in India, it's a big thing when you talk about ancestral homes. In America, it doesn't really compute. Ancestral home, what's that? New York? You know, because there's no... Because American people are so mobile. And we're a society... Basically, we're a society of immigrants. All of us. I mean, in the last 100, 200 years, practically everybody had grandparents, great-grandparents who came from Europe, who came from Africa, who came from, you know, so many places. So, you know, where's our ancestral home? And then we have to go through this whole thing called roots. We have to hire a genealogist. We have to take something, a swab from our cheeks. That's what they do? They take a swab from your cheek, and you send it in to get genetic analysis, and they can just tell your whole root, all your roots. It costs about $800, $900. You can even have that done for your dog if you want. It's less expensive. I was thinking of taking mine and sending it in, saying it's my dog, and see what they came up with. Just to see what happened. Anyway, so a little humor there. So Srila Jiva Goswami told his mother he was going to visit his ancestral home, but in fact he went to Navadvip, and in Navadvip he met Lord Nityananda, and that's pretty nice. And Lord Nityananda took him around to all the places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's youth and pastimes. He even took him to meet Lord Chaitanya's wife, Vishnu Priya, and Lord Chaitanya's mother, Sachimata, was still there. And they actually cooked for Jiva Goswami. That's pretty nice, too. And Lord Nityananda took him all over the nine islands. That's why it's called Navadvip. And he got the instruction by Lord Nityananda at that time that he should renounce the world and go to join his uncles and go to Vrindavan, of course, and write Vaishnava literatures. So he took that instruction very seriously, but Lord Nityananda also said, when you go to Vrindavan, you should stop in Benares on the way. Now, the reason he was told to stop in Benares was not that Lord Nityananda wanted him to have association with the Mayavadis in Benares. He wanted to have association with this Madhusudana Vachaspati, who was actually a relative of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and he was a very intelligent Sanskrit expert. And he wanted Jiva Goswami to get some instruction from this Madhusudana Vachaspati. So Jiva Goswami went to, following the order of Lord Nityananda, after his mother died, he went to Benares, took instruction. Another point is Jiva Goswami is considered an incarnation of a gopi known as Vilas Manjari. The Manjari gopis are the assistant gopis. They always remain what we call prepubescent. That means before someone hits puberty. Because when someone hits puberty, they become different. Their voices change. It's like in some churches in Europe, they have choirs with prepubescent boys, and they all have like nice voices. And as soon as the boys reach like 12 or 13, they kick them out of the choir. Poor boys. Anyway. So, because there's something very sweet. There's something very sweet about that age. I mean, of course, in the spiritual world, even if someone gets a little older, it's okay. But there's a special sweetness about that prepubescent age. There's an innocence and a sweetness. And so these Manjari gopis, they assist Srimati Radharani and the other principal gopis in Radha Krishna conjugal loving affairs. And they actually can enter, even where Radha and Krishna are enjoying their intimate conjugal loving affairs, they can be there at the same time because there's when you're pubescent, there's no awakening of any understanding of lusty affairs. When you go through the teenage years, there's definitely an awakening. Anyway, and in the spiritual world, even though there's not material bodies in the spiritual world, still those symptoms of, you know, puberty and other things are manifest, which is quite interesting. And so Krishna and Radharani in the spiritual world are always like 16 years of age. That's a perfect age. That's just when, that's full youth. After that, it's all downhill. Isn't it? 16 is just like, even in Latin American culture, they have this thing called sweet 16. Anyone's heard of that before? No. That's the coming out party. Like that. Anyway, so he's a Manjari Gopi, which means like very young, able to assist in the most intimate Radha and Krishna pastimes, whereas the older gopis, they remain outside of the bower or the kunja. You understand? Because they're more knowledgeable about, and they, anyway, because they're more knowledgeable and they're older about things. Whereas the Manjari Gopis, they're very innocent. They're just assisting Radha and Krishna in a very intimate way. So anyway, so here's a Manjari Gopi, Vilas Manjari. So we already spoke about him going to Navadvip. And Jiva Goswami, when he was young, he worshipped a Balaram deity, which he recognized as being non-different than Lord Nityananda. We mentioned of how he took instruction. All in Benares also, he became so well known, even though his stay in Benares was very brief. He published some things, or at least wrote some things, called the Sarva Sangvadani, where he comments on the Vedanta Sutra commentaries of the main acharyas, Madhva, Ramanuja, Shankara, and other personalities. And he became a thorough and well-rounded authority in all the branches of learning, even though he was only staying in Benares for a short time. And to this day, Benares Hindi University dedicates a whole department to Srila Jiva Goswami. It's nice, isn't it? Okay. Whoops. Here we go. Pages. So then he went to Vrindavan. When he arrived in Vrindavan, as I mentioned before, when he was 20 years old. And while he was in Vrindavan, he compiled over 400,000 Sanskrit verses. And he had association with the other five Goswamis, as well as Prabhananda Saraswati, Kashishvara Pandit, and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who compiled the and wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So when Jiva Goswami arrived in Vrindavan, he approached Sanatan, who was his eldest uncle, for initiation. But Sanatan deferred that responsibility of initiation to Rupa Goswami. And so Rupa Goswami, before he gave initiation, decided to test Srila Jiva Goswami by giving him menial service to perform, and such menial service as begging alms, preparing food, research, doing research, massaging Rupa Goswami's feet, and preparing palm leaves for Rupa Goswami's writing. When Rupa Goswami saw this selfless attitude of Srila Jiva Goswami, then he gave him initiation at that point. So shortly after initiation, what happened is a famous story. This conquering pundit known as Rupa Narayan Saraswati came to Vrindavan. And he was well known as one of the most learned people in that area. And he was what we call a dig vijayi. That means he went around challenging people, getting a Jayapatra certificate of, winning like that. You know, I have won Jayapatra. Patra means leap, basically. Jaya means victory sometimes. Just like we say, jai. It also means victory, wonderful, different things like that, according to the context. So basically, it means a certificate that you've won a contest. Just like nowadays, they have different little statues that they give people. Isn't it? One time we had in North Carolina, there was a lady who was very proud that she could argue and defeat anybody in argumentation. And I joked that she got a statue with a big mouth on it. Anyway, and she liked that joke. So anyway, so he got Jayapatras from everybody. And so he approached Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, because they were known all over India as great scholars. And he challenged them. And Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami said, you know, we're not such great scholars. You know, we don't have time for this. And Rupa Narayan said, you are frauds. That's a big insult. If you were learned as people say you were, you would both accept my challenge. And Rupa and Sanatan Goswami said that their reputation was exaggerated by their well-wishers. And they were not fit to engage in debate with such a learned person. And Rupa Narayan was very, very happy to hear this, oh, Jai. And he said, therefore, will you sign this paper, you know, the Jayapatra, that we have been defeated by Rupa Narayan Saraswati, who we affirm to be the greatest scholar in India. And so they said, okay, bring us our pens, or whatever they used to sign with, a quill, I guess. I guess they used the feather. And those, yeah, a quill. A quill means like they had a feather or some bird or something like that, and they dipped it in some substance. So they wrote out, you know, you have won. Goodbye. And so they said goodbye to him, and then so he became super proud. He was going all over Vrindavan just bragging and bragging and bragging. But then he heard that there was this person named Jiva Goswami. And so he went to Jiva Goswami and said to Jiva Goswami, you know, I have defeated your uncles. I'm so great. Look at the certificate. Ha! You know, you Vaishnavas think you're so intelligent. So Jiva Goswami became incensed. Incensed doesn't mean he burned some incense. That means he became angry. And then Jiva Goswami thought, you know, how can my uncles be defeated by this so-called scholar? So Rupa Narayan said, Jiva Goswami, you should engage in debate with me. And he thought, well, if I can defeat Jiva Goswami, then no one can question me. No one can question my reputation. So Jiva Goswami spent 7 days on the banks of the Jamuna trying to vindicate the reputation of his uncles. And on the final day, he soundly defeated Rupa Narayan Saraswati. It's sometimes described that Rupa Narayan Saraswati, after that, had a call of nature. It's not that nature calls you on your cell phone, you know. There was an interesting cartoon in the newspaper the other day. There was a squirrel with a cell phone. It said a call of nature. Anyway, it means that he had to go to the bathroom because it was such distress. When someone's traumatized, something that happens. Sometimes that happens. And so Jiva Goswami became very happy. He wanted to share this conquest with his uncles, Rupa and Sanatan. And he went to them and he said, look what I've done. I defeated this rascal. And Rupa Goswami, his spiritual master, told him, you are not able to conquer your anger and sense of pride. Anyone who rejoices in humiliating others or who asserts his own worth is not fit to live in Vrindavan. You are banished and leave immediately. That's pretty heavy. And remember, you know, Jiva Goswami had just dedicated his whole life to his spiritual master and living in Vrindavan. His mother and father had died. You know, you just think of the history. He had nothing. So get out of here. You're not qualified to live in Vrindavan. That's heavy. Poor Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami was very humble. He didn't argue. And he left Vrindavan, lived in Mathura, and it said that he lived in the hollow of a tree. That was his home. In other words, sometimes you have an old tree, there's like a hollow, it's just hollowed out for something. In India, you see this quite often. You find old trees which just have the outside of it. You know, and it's just hollow inside. I've seen that many, many times in India. And then he lived in the hollow of the tree, ate simple food, and he took a vow of silence that was to last for one solid year. And remember, he was a scholar. You know, so try to understand the scenario with him, who he was, you know. And he was a scholar. He was about 21 years old, you know, young man. And he had lost everything in this world, dedicated his life to his gurus and to Krishna, and then he was banished, and he just, I guess it was like spiritual depression. So, but this year was cut short by the mercy of Sanatan Goswami, who asked Srila Rupa Goswami one time when he found out about where Jiva Goswami was. He said, my dear Rupa Goswami, my dear brother, you're neglecting to follow one of the cardinal teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Rupa Goswami said, which teaching? And Sanatan Goswami said, recite the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and when we get to the teaching, I'll tell you which one it is. And so Rupa began to patiently recite all of Lord Chaitanya's precepts, and finally he came to this precept of Jiva Doya. Doya means mercy. Mercy to all living entities, of course, Jiva Doya. And then Sanatan said, that's the one. And Jiva Goswami said, Rupa Goswami said, I have to be kind to Jiva. So Jiva was allowed back in. And Srila Prabhupada comments on this, that Jiva Goswami did act properly, because one should become angry when a Vaishnava is offended or challenged or blasphemed. Like we see, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was ready to kill both Jagai and Madai when they had offended Lord Nityananda. So that, in that case, anger is appropriate. So it wasn't Jiva Goswami's fault. This was simply a pastime to show Jiva Goswami's humility. There's another story that was contrived by Jiva Goswami's critics to try to criticize him. And they criticized Jiva Goswami, and they said that he wasn't aware of the, or in favor of the Parikya Rasa. He was teaching mostly about the Swakya Rasa. Swakya means Radha and Krishna married. Parikya means Radha and Krishna are not married. So they said, Jiva Goswami could not be in such a high platform. He's just teaching about this Swakya, you know, Lakshmi Narayan stuff. He doesn't really understand. So this criticism was leveled at Srila Jiva Goswami. And the reason they got away with it was that many of Jiva Goswami's followers were very immature, so he couldn't teach them so much about Parikya Rasa. He had to stress the Swakya Rasa. Although in his books, he did talk about Parikya Rasa, and he was obviously established in Parikya Rasa because he was a Manjari Gopi in his ontological position. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada commented on these criticisms, and they defended Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami was a very systematic preacher. Now, we're using the word preacher deliberately. To the other Goswamis, they preached, but they didn't, let us say, preach that widely outside of the Vrindavan area. But Jiva Goswami had this plan to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, starting with West Bengal. So he was the one who sent Srinivasacharya, Narottama Das Thakur, and Shyamananda to West Bengal with that bullock cart where the books were later stolen by King Virhamvir. I think you all know that story. And so he actually organized the first traveling Sankirtan party. And it's also interesting that Srila Prabhupada's eternal residence is in the Radha Damodara temple, which is the temple of Srila Jiva Goswami. So you see, like, the Sankirtan of the preaching or the spreading of Krishna consciousness everywhere started actually from Srila Jiva Goswami. The plan to inundate the whole world, of course, that came from Lord Chaitanya, I understand, but Jiva Goswami was the one who was manifest that externally more than anyone else during the time of the Goswamis. And then Srila Prabhupada, the most
dear devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis of Vrindavan, resided in Radhadama temple and got his inspiration from Srila Jiva Goswami and, of course, from the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami, which is there in Radhadamodara temple. So, anyway, so Srila Jiva Goswami's fame spread all over India, and even the emperor, Akbar, who was a Mughal, but he was very favorable to different religions. He wasn't only favorable to the Krishna conscious religion. He wanted to amalgamate, that means combine. His idea was to come up with a amalgamation of religion that everybody could accept. So, because he wanted peace between everybody. So he was very much into meeting with Muslims. He was a Muslim, of course. He was very much into meeting with Hindus and all the different Buddhists. And he was trying to come to some sort of conclusion. Ultimately, that discussion led to the point of different groups like in the modern day, like the Arya Samaj being formed. Arya Samaj and Brahmo Samaj, which are adaptations or, let us say, contaminations of Vedic understanding with the attempt to bring peace in India. Because both the Arya Samaj and the Brahmo Samaj, they deny the worship of the deities. Because one of the main things that interfered with all the religions working together were deities. You know, in the Muslims, they could accept chanting Hare Krishna. There's no problem. Even they have the Sufis. Sufis don't chant. Some of them do chant Hare Krishna. But anyway, you have Sufis who do their dance, and they're very open to everything like that. So the main sticking point between the religions was the worship of the deities. And therefore, you find in the history of the Muslim religion, you find Muhammad smashing all the deities in the Kaaba, in Mecca. And there's many statements there in the Quran about, you know, forms. You'll only have one God, and not all these different deities. Anyway, so that's the history of the Muslim thing. So Akbar was very much into that too, although he did support temples and deity worship too, with the idea of bringing people together. So Akbar heard about, he's called Akbar the Great, and his dynasty later on became degraded. You know, later on you had Shahjahan, and Shahjahan was the one who erected there's a little controversy about that, erected the Taj Mahal, because his wife, he was in love and his wife died. But some people say the Taj Mahal was called Tejo Mahal before. I mean, anyway, it was the Lord Shiva temple and later on converted to the mausoleum. And I'm not going to argue that point because that's sort of a controversial point. But in any case, Emperor Akbar, who was actually very nice, and like I said, his dynasty became degraded by Shahjahan and later on, Aurangzeb, it got worse and worse and worse. First, there was someone in love, and then after that, you know, after lust comes anger. It's interesting. You look at the dynasty. There was Akbar, who was nice, and then Shahjahan, who just like became lusty, and then Aurangzeb, who became angry. So it's like this progression, you know, from contemplating sense objects. Attachment develops, attachment comes lust, lust comes anger, right? Okay. So it happened in that dynasty. That's a little side issue. So Akbar heard about Jiva Goswami, and he had an audience with Jiva Goswami, and he had some revelation, you know. He was taken to this place called Nidiban, which means the place where Radha and Krishna sleep. It's a forest in Vrindavan, a little bond, you know. Not exactly a big forest or a jungle or anything like that, but just the little bushes. And in this Nidiban, I don't know if anyone's been in this Nidiban. There's a temple of Radha Krishna sleeping. Anyone's been there? No. No one's been to Nidiban in Vrindavan. And there's a corner in there, and there's actually a bed, and they worship Radha Krishna sleeping. Anyway, so he was taken there, and he had some vision. And then he became a great supporter of Goswami because of Jiva Goswami's directing him and preaching to him. And because of Jiva Goswami, Akbar directed his men to construct the four original temples of Vrindavan, Madan Mohan, Govindadev, Gopinath, and Yugo Kishore. So that was because of Jiva Goswami's dealings with Akbar that so much facility was given. Jiva Goswami also met great personalities like Mirabai. And Jiva Goswami supervised the building of the Radha Damodar Temple, like I said, which is Prabhupada's eternal residence. Prabhupada said that. Of course, nowadays there's some legal claim or legal dispute about that residence. So, let's see. In that Radha Damodar Temple, there's also a Granth Samadhi, which means a samadhi of all the books of the Goswamis. It's enclosed in concrete. I don't know if you've seen that. Anyone here been to the Radha Damodar? I think some of you have. When you circumambulate, there's this cupola in the corner, and that's a samadhi of the books of the Goswamis of Vrindavan. So Jiva Goswami composed and edited at least 25 books. And amongst those books, the most famous, one of them is the Harinamamrita Vyakarana, which is a Sanskrit grammar book, which teaches Sanskrit grammar based upon Krishna's holy names. And it says that anybody who learns Sanskrit in this way will become a great devotee of Krishna and also become in ecstasy, too, at the same time. He wrote his Radha Krishna, Krishnarchana Deepika, which is a composition that gives details about worshipping Radha and Krishna together. And then there's the Gopal Champu, which there's two parts, one which deals with Krishna's activities in Vrindavan, the other one which deals with Krishna's activities in Mathura and Dwarka. It's like an epic book. It goes through all of Krishna's past. It's a wonderful book. It's written in elaborate poetic style and with profound devotion. And also the Krama Sandarbha, which is the commentary on the 10th canto, actually all 12 cantos, sorry, of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then most famous, of course, the Shat Sandarbha, the six Sandarbhas, which elaborate on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the Sambandhavideya Prayojana. There's the Tattva Sandarbha, which proved Srimad Bhagavatam to be the most authoritative. Bhagavat Sandarbha, which draws a distinction between impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. There's the third, the Paramatma Sandarbha, which is a description of the Paramatma and how the Paramatma exists, and talking about all the different incarnations, Leela avatars, Guna avatars, Purusha avatars. Then the fourth Sandarbha is called the Krishna Sandarbha, in which book Krishna is proved to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's descriptions of Goloka Vrindavan and the Yadavas and the coward boys, and also a list of the gopis' names and the description of the topmost position of Srimati Radharani. The fifth one is called the Bhakti Sandarbha, and that's how devotional service is executed. And the last one is the Priti Sandarbha, which talks about ultimate stage of love of God. It's called the Prayojana Sandarbha, in which talks about the different bhavas, the different rasas, overlapping rasas, etc. So these are the primary works of Srila Jiva Goswami. That's all we have time for. We'll finish right up. Any questions or comments about Srila Jiva Goswami? Yeah.
In reference to the 25 books, our concept of a book is like 100 pages or something. These books are...
Some of them are quite larger than that. Yeah, they're larger than that. Like I mentioned, it was 400,000 verses, more than 400,000 verses he composed. And that's very large. Some of them are larger and some of them are smaller. Not all of them are like 100 pages. Some of them are just like 5 pages or 10 pages. Yeah, so they're book or booklets or...
Big books.
Yeah, concept of a book.